Welcome to the weekend edition of the Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. On today's program, we got a lot to cover, as always, and looking forward to introducing you to today's guests. But in addition to that, I do want to mention that the Price of Business, which is one of the longest-running business shows in the country, continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com. We are adding new content all the time. There you can see all of our regular guests. We have reoccurring guests from Fox Business, from Yahoo Finance, gentlemen like Cody Willard, who was a longtime CNBC and Fox Business anchor. He's on this program every single week. And so we're excited by the talent that we bring you. Also, I do want to mention I've got a book called Making New Rich Books Work for You, and exclusively for our listeners of this program. It's available at a ridiculously low price. If you want to get more information about that, go to priceofbusiness.com. If you read anything by people like Tim Ferriss or Robert Kiyosaki, who's been on my show many, many times, and you know, really were excited but had little to show for it when you try to pursue those things, my book explains why. There's something going on, and the problem really isn't with these authors. It's usually with the reader. And you can get more information about that at priceofbusiness.com. With that, here's our first guest right here on The Price of Business.
Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Michael Marino, he is a show favorite and personal favorite, someone who, he has just caught on. And I remember when he and I first chatted about doing a series on the program, I was excited about it. But I'm kind of geeky about the things that he's talking about, the importance of consideration when it comes to dealing with people, particularly on a business and professional level. Some skills that were somewhat common knowledge really a couple of decades ago that have been really swept away, where all of a sudden the workplace has become like Lord of the Flies. Rather than a constructive environment where we encourage one another in order to do better. And he's restoring those in our series, and people are so intrigued by this because of the fact that it's like, I never thought of this before. You know, and part of the problem, Michael, and I'm going to have you mention your firm and the best website for it here in a moment, but part of the problem is, you know, really it's been decades since this has been a value. And in fact, I would argue that a movie I absolutely love, which is Wall Street, I love that movie, but let's face it, that movie created a real paradigm shift in the way businesses perceived employees, and they went from already treating them like tools to perceiving them as nothing more than tools to actually acting like they were tools. And a lot of chest pounding, a lot of arrogance, and that wasn't the case for a very long time, surprisingly. It's interesting to see how that unhealthy approach has become conventional wisdom, and so I'm so glad you bring us an alternative view, and I love this series. Take a minute to mention your firm and your best website.
Hey, Kevin. Yes, it's always a pleasure, and I really appreciate the opportunity and of course, enjoy and look forward to our conversations each session. So as you mentioned, Michael Marino, the firm is SafeArth.com. We're one of those global law firms, a large firm, and a very significant practice in the area of labor and employment law. We represent management, but of course we're very sensitive to trying to have success as our clients define it. And there's lots of different ways, as we've discussed many times, to get there. And one of them is, I think, as you say, kind of using a little mixture of old school common sense. And I think there was a book written, you know, the principles and things that you learn in kindergarten that can help govern you the rest of your life. And sometimes we tend to overlook those things. So in part, I think what I've really enjoyed talking about is, let's think about some of the fundamental factors that go into defining success, and success in a negotiation, which is essentially everything we do every day, can be defined, of course, in many different ways, and it does not necessarily, there are exceptions, but it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game.
Yes, that's a great point. All right, let's get into our topic today. This is a good one. This really, as you point out during the break, I do have bright listeners, and we do get good feedback. And it's one of the advantages of being a business show in particular, because you've got people who think business-like. And so why don't you set the stage with the question we got, and go ahead and jump in with your initial thoughts.
Yes, sir. Happy to do that. Well, as you mentioned, been very, very excited with some of your listeners asking kind of very sophisticated, insightful, and nuanced questions. And one that caught my attention was, wait, how can employers use some of these techniques of negotiation rather than litigation as a proactive strategy when dealing with disputes, terminations, performance issues? Now, there's a lot to unpack there, but it really struck a chord with me because I think that it raises something that does provide an opportunity. And we always give kind of the little lawyer's caveat. Look, we all know there are situations where really bad things have happened. Negotiation is not going to be probably the way that it gets resolved. But that's a tiny, tiny percent of everyday kind of example. So our theme today, picking up on one of the kind of the informal techniques that I've learned and had a great deal of success, I think, for clients over the years with my union adversaries across the table is what we call the coffee negotiation. And we'll kind of get to that in a bit, but I think that there's we could start with talking about, just some of the daily kind of situations that come up that often end up in unpleasant nastiness and litigation. And we can jump into that as soon as we are ready to go.
Yeah, go right ahead. Jump right into it.
Okay, well, let's start with a real simple one. So we all know that one of the things that employers and employees both get very concerned about is if there's a perception of disparate treatment. And it doesn't have to be in the form of formal discrimination. We all know now that the workplace is governed by a series of federal, state, even local laws that really are designed to ensure that decisions with respect to your employment are made on the basis of merit and performance, not on personal characteristics. And I think that most employers, if I'd love to say all employers, but employers really do get it. It's been 50 years now dealing with the EEOC and recognizing that factors like age, sex, religion, are not and cannot and have no place in the workplace to make your decisions in the way you treat people. So if we just take one of our common examples, let's say Susie comes in late and everybody knows that she was late and then they don't see anything. Nothing really happens. Life goes on, doesn't seem to have bothered Susie, doesn't seem to have bothered the employee. Well, fast forward a week, Joe comes in late and it becomes very clear that Joe is the subject to disciplinary action because he ends up getting suspended. He's not at work. He starts telling his story to his buddies and it gets around. Now, it all may be very legitimate what the action that the employer took, but the perception can be of disparate treatment. And disparate treatment is really kind of a killer in the workplace. So, what's a way, what is it? Obviously, people don't talk about, and the human resource departments are very good. They're not going to talk to you about what happened in some other case. But we could use our technique to talk about what happened to you. Like Kevin, you come in and you say, wait a minute, why did I get disciplined? Everybody comes in late. Nobody else got disciplined. My car broke down, this and that. I got all kinds of excuses. If instead of immediately lowering the boom on Kevin, and we say, you know what, Kevin, let's have a coffee. I'm going to meet you, whether it's in the break room or at the Denny's next door, But I want to hear your side of the story before, and this is not part of the formal type investigative process. This is just having the coffee because it's a chance to say, listen, I got to tell you, this is what's been reported to me, and I have no choice. I'm going to have to give some disciplinary action as a result of that. And I can't tell you what happened in other situations, but I can tell you that they're distinguishable from what I understand what happened in your situation. So let's have this coffee conversation, and that'll give me a chance to see if I left something out before I get into the formal investigatory process. Now, again, just a quick footnote on that. If we happen to have a union, then, of course, people that have unions understand that that triggers another legal issue, and you would, Kevin, you'd have the right to say, no, no, I want my union rep here, and that's fine. That's how this concept started with me, reaching across the table and calling my adversaries, who oftentimes became very good channels of communication with, and said, listen, Kevin, we're going to be meeting in negotiations formally next week, but I want to give you a heads up. I got some messages that I know you're not going to like, so let's try to have a coffee and see if we get it out of the way. So those are the parallel tracks for this concept.
Yeah, yeah. And what's important about this concept, because a lot of listeners are going to go, oh, well, what difference will it make? In the end, you know, the company is going to proceed accordingly. That's probably true, although in many cases, and I know you can attest to this, they can make modifications that, you know, make it at least more comfortable. They can do things that show interest in the employees. But most important, regardless if they can't make a change or not, substantive change or not, is the importance of being heard. And that's basically captures the essence of what you're talking about. Employees are tired of not being heard.
I think that's a fairly accurate statement. You know, for employers, and certainly the types of companies that we deal with in a large firm, you know, they're generally, they want to do the right thing. They have a lot of professional people. They have a lot of people that are very sensitive to what the laws require. They're very good at that part. In other words, if there is going to be, and we hear this in the news all the time now, there are going to be different reductions in forces, things that are affected by this or that, or whatever the effect of AI is. And no one may have done anything wrong. And employers are very good at checking all the legal boxes. And basically, you know, we deal on these fundamental concepts of procedural and substantive due process, covered again by certain laws like age discrimination. So that if you do have a big layoff, you have to make sure, hey, what are the demographics? Let's make sure it doesn't have a disproportionate. Companies are, you know, they're good at that. They put you on notice. But the notice is given to you normally the day that you get called in. Now, again, there's lots of other factors and reasons that can go into when announcements take place. And, you know, we understand all of that. But what we're talking about here is, to your point, is communication. Basic communication is really the key. And if I have the opportunity, and lots of management people are very good at this, you know, listen, before we get into the formal stuff, they often have monthly meetings, business meetings, et cetera. Good opportunity to say, look, I'm also going to have, as I told you, this is down, sales are down, whatever it may be. We're facing some headwinds here. And I also want to know that I'm available. Anybody wants to have a coffee, wants to understand, wants to get some of the dynamics of this. It's such a good investment because, as you said, the bad news may not be changed, but you get a chance to process it, whether you're at the individual level. If we switch back to the disciplinary level, our man Joe, he may say, you know what? I know I screwed up, but I don't think I should be terminated for that, and here's why.
Yeah.
And, you know, get a chance for that in ahead of the game, because litigation results when you have to dig in your heels, and on both sides there may have been a misperception that we can avoid, and we can get all the emotion out in an informal setting and really get down to the business of how this is going to have to be resolved or taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is old school. And some of this is fairly common practice. You know, I didn't get you a chance to comment, and there might be a good comment as we get closer to wrapping up our segment. You know, I referred to Wall Street. Fascinating, interesting, a little exaggerated. That's what movies do, right? But interesting, the profound impact, I think, of people that I've met over the years who are kind of on the not so sure about ethics side in the stockbrokering space, who got inspired by Wall Street, you know. But right. I don't think it not only created that kind of shifty sales guy type of thing. I think it really had a really negative impact on how employers perceived, because I think they've always had a utilitarian view of employees. That's not new. But they were more thoughtful and strategic about it, if nothing else, for their own self-interest. That seemed to change in the 80s.
Yes. No, you're 100% right, because oftentimes the mantra became, what does it cost me to fix it? Everything became defined in monetary terms instead of human terms. Let me give you one quick example that I've always loved over the years. And you may recall it was back in the 1920s, a century ago now, unbelievably, but there was a lot of focus on time and motion study. Like, how long does it take to do this job? Okay, you got 45 seconds. This is what you should be able to do. And it was very much an assembly line. So there was a great, there was a study done by Westinghouse, which in those days were making the telephones, the real telephones that were black and that you picked up and had a cord attached to them. And so the time and motion guys came into one of the Westinghouse facilities, and they were going to figure out breaking down each individual task. How long does it take to get this done? And of course, if you couldn't do it, you weren't meeting standard, and it had an adverse impact on you. What they found, I found really fascinating. When they went to different tables and they were all standing around, and it happened to be largely females that were doing these assembly work, production levels went way up. They went way up for the same reason that your kids want you to come to the soccer game. Somebody was paying attention to them. They were, they didn't know exactly why they were there, but someone was watching. Someone realized that, you know, this is not easy work that we're doing here, and it can be tiresome. But we lost sight of the fact that the positive reinforcement of you're doing a good job, and we appreciate what you're doing, and we're paying attention, and we are aware of it. I'll give one old example that many of your viewers wouldn't probably remember, but I'm sure you can still catch it on reruns. And it was the show Hill Street Blues. It was kind of the first edgy kind of police drama. And one of my favorite characters, Captain Ferrillo, was so good at crisis management. So oftentimes he's leaving in the morning, the third shift guys are coming in, and he would call out and say, "Hey, nice job last night." And instantly communicating to those people that he was aware what they did, that they were out there trying to solve crime and on the streets at a terrible times of the midnight to 6 a.m. when not good things happen. All of those things were so important because it reinforced to employees, you know, the worth that they had and the importance of it. And it's a common sense basic provision that, you know, really helps and I think dovetails into everything that we're talking about.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Final thoughts. I'm going to leave that as a final thought, unless there's something you really feel like we need to insert.
I think that that's it. I think, again, if we just kind of stop and reflect, and we want people to really think through, hey, maybe I have all the facts right, or maybe I have something that has to be communicated. What's the best way to get out there? And don't think of it as just a financial/legal decision. Hey, we got all the box checked, and that's it. Think about that added dimension, because it makes, whether it's a wind down or an individual disciplinary action, people recognize that they make mistakes, they want to be heard, and they want to know that they're still in a position to do the right thing and that someone was giving them that opportunity.
Michael Marino, thanks so much for being with us. I am Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. Must mention, this is a show that never ends. It continues 24/7 at priceofbusiness.com, where we are adding new audio, video, articles, and more just about every single day. And in addition to that, make sure you get our newsletter, which is free. It's called Read Instead. It's the best of the Price of Business digital network. Someone you'll find there, someone you'll find throughout the network of our 12 different sites, is Alexander Pakin. He's an attorney, one of my favorite people to talk to. He takes some very complex ideas regarding the law, simplifies them for people like me. He is very forward-thinking in a profession that, frankly, in my opinion, and I think his as well, lacks forward-thinking. He's a lot of fun to have on the show. Always glad to have you with us, Alexander. And your website is PakinLaw.net. You're involved in business law, and you're a technology leader in the legal field, not just for business lawyers, but lawyers, period, as they limp along through the 21st century. You're helping them. So glad to have you back, as always.
Oh, thank you, Kevin. I am indeed dragging them kicking and screaming into the 21st century. In some cases, I almost feel like I'm still dragging them into the second half of the 20th. But it's a fun job in some ways.
Yeah, they're waiting for that. You've got mail. But anyway.
You kid. If you only knew how many New York attorneys are still communicating with an @AOL.com email address. Every time I get one, my hope for humanity suffers just another little cardiac arrest.
And you know you're going to charge. You'll have to charge them twice as much. But anyway, okay. Let's get into our topic today, which has been very timely. Frankly, you know, when the economy's weird like it is, and I think AI is settling in as a real potential game changer, both good and bad, it's complicated, like most technology advances. There's a lot of people who are thinking about, wait, I'm not going to survive when I'm working for someone else. I need to create my own business. I've thought about it forever. What do I do next? And that really is the focus of our conversation today.
Indeed. So a lot of people think that starting a company is just that. There's different company types, and if you're going to go it alone and be the only owner, you have more choices than if you're going to take on a partner, and you have more choices still as compared to somebody who's going to take on investors. So Everybody's heard the basic terms corporation, LLC, partnership, and in reality, the selection you make in day one will probably haunt you for the rest of your career, or at least for the rest of that corporation or LLC's or partnership's life, if you didn't make the right choice. So I want to discuss why there's nowadays, honestly, only one right choice. Now, we're going to go through the bullets of what your choices are, just so everybody understands why they shouldn't do an LLC, why they shouldn't do a partnership. Because quite frankly, at the end of these next few minutes, I am going to prove to you that corporations are the way to go.
C-corps.
And no, S-corp.
No.
When you're starting.
Okay.
And then later
we'll
get to C-corp. But we'll get into the details in a minute. So, in reality, let's first run through the options. You and I want to start a business together. Now, the, quote, simplest way to go is a partnership. Now, in a partnership, the only people who are going to own the business are the ones who are actively running it, the partners. So you commonly see this in a law firm, a doctor's office, accountant's office, where if you and I are working together on the same goal as co-owners and co-operators, we owe each other a full fiduciary duty. We build this thing around a nexus of total trust, and each of us is liable to the other. And there's no real entity outside of that where, let's say, a third person can come along and say, I want to invest in your business. Well, too bad. They can give us a loan with, you know, great interest terms, but they can't invest in terms of buying shares or buying membership interest. So partnerships are great, except everybody's fully on the hook. There's really no liability protection or very little, and you owe a duty to each other. Simple, straightforward, right?
Yes.
Doesn't allow for growth, doesn't provide a great liability shield. So we're going to go on to the limited liability company. Now, the limited liability company, the LLC, is essentially you and I making an agreement that we're starting kind of like a corporation, but not really. We're not going to subject ourselves to standard corporate law, which has been around for hundreds of years. Instead, we're going to rely on the much younger and newer and often not rock solid in its reliability LLC statutes that vary more state to state. And not only that, we are going to put ourselves in a position where we have to set all the rules and argue them amongst ourselves. And if we don't decide on something, there may not be a state mechanism that will help us. So let's say you and I start an LLC. We take on a third person. He's a minority member. He's going to have 10%. Now, 2 years from now, he realizes he doesn't really like the investment. He's not seeing any profit. He's got better opportunities elsewhere. He says, I want to sell my membership interests. And we say, well, you don't want to buy them. I don't want to buy them. Sorry, you're stuck here. Now, the same kind of thing can happen in a corporation, but in a corporation, you can go out and sell the shares to someone else. In an LLC, the membership interests will often be locked in by a membership agreement because we're going to say we don't want some other random third person. And now you're stuck with the idea that if there's no mechanism for a buyout in the LLC, the member is just stuck with it. Same as far as pushing someone out. We can't have a vote to push out a member if the LLC documents don't provide for it. So a lot of times, unless you craft a really, really complex LLC governing document, you're going to be stuck with, well, a good liability shield, but in reality, something that is not scalable, is not growable, can't go beyond its initial spot. So an LLC, quite frankly, is okay for a doctor's office or a law office where you know who all the owners are going to be. You're not seeking outside investment. And the main difference between it and a partnership from a practical perspective is that you have a much stronger liability shield and that you can take on members who aren't necessarily employees and officers. Now, that's the key distinction. In a partnership, you and I are both equally on the hook. You and I are both equally responsible for the business. In an LLC, we can agree that you're going to be the managing member, you're going to operate the radio station, you're going to do all the day-to-day stuff, and I'm a passive member. I'm putting in my money, letting you run with it, and I'll vote at membership annual meetings, but other than that, I'm not involved. In which case, you as an officer and employee of the LLC owe me a duty. My only duty is to cash my check.
Yeah.
So it does provide for that outside investor. But realistically, I don't think you've ever heard of an LLC ending up on the stock exchange. Why? Because it has no shares. And it only has limited membership interests that are tied into the LLC. So if you go with a private investor to build out your LLC a little bit, yes, that works. But you can't put your membership interests in an LLC into an open market the same way you can with a corporation. With a corporation, I own shares in Microsoft. I own shares in Tesla. I have no responsibility for anything. I'm protected by standard corporate law in the U.S. that's been governing stocks since, well, long before you and I were born. And the concrete nature of those statutes means I've got full liability protection. No matter what Elon Musk decides to say tomorrow, nobody's going to sue me the way they would if I were a partner. And if I decide I'm sick and tired of his tweets tomorrow, I can sell his shares in an open market, and I don't have to make an offer to anybody else within the Tesla ownership group and hope they buy me out, subject to whatever terms are in my specific document. So there's the freedom of a corporation. And the main problem with a corporation is that it's a little bit more work as far as the regularly scheduled taxation and reporting, depending on the state. And here is where all of this solves itself, the S-Corp. So the S-Corp.
Yeah, and by the way, we quickly, as you know, with our time frame, get to beat the clock, and we're already near there. So focus like a laser beam on this as we wrap it up.
Oh, I'm getting there, I promise. So the S-Corp gives you the best of both worlds. The S-Corp, as long as you have a limited number of shareholders, so you and I bring in up to I think 50 people for an S-Corp, if I remember correctly, we can get together and have essentially the same thing we'd have with an LLC. simple taxation, simple filings, no separate tax returns, and basically everything you get in an LLC plus everything you get in a corporation. And then if we decide that we want to grow and we want to get onto the stock market or even just attract larger venture capital investors, we can always convert our company from an S-corp or a subchapter S-corporation, often referred to as a simple corporation, to a proper corporation, a C-corp, subchapter C of the corporate laws, and that will then allow us to become Microsoft or Tesla should we want to.
There you go. So, wow, that sounded magical. It's not quite that magical, but it makes a lot of sense. I like that, and that is a great – I've heard a lot of clients of attorneys said, boy, they had to do a lot of work to just get what you presented, and I think that's crucial. And I love that flexibility and the clarity in which you talked about it. I love that. And that's a good final thought. Again, Alexander Paykin, one of my favorite people to talk to, really cutting edge when it comes to the law, very practical, hands-on. His website, Paykin, P-A-Y-K-I-N, law.net. Alexander, as always, thank you.
Oh, no trouble. Pleasure being here again.
Great.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right. We'll talk soon. That is Alexander Paykin. I am Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business. This is the show that never ends. We like to say it continues 24/7. At priceofbusiness.com, we are always adding audio, video, articles, and more. Check it out and sign up for our newsletter. Read instead at priceofbusiness.com. Lee Kaplan, who's my guest, he is frequently on Read Instead, certainly all over priceofbusiness.com and our partner websites. He's one of my favorite pundits to talk to about policy and politics. And he is an attorney in the Houston area. And Lee, before we get into our topic today, why don't you take just a minute to talk about your legal practice and the best website for more information.
Sure. Thank you. My firm is called Murphy Ball Stratton, and it's mbssmartlaw.com. We're a trial boutique. We do trials, arbitrations, settlement discussions, of course, and appeals. And we have white-collar lawyers, too. Every one of our lawyers has experience in the federal courts and the state courts. And we only hire people who have brains but a lot of moxie because making things happen in litigation requires a lot of effort. So we have a very varied docket ranging from white collar to patents to copyrights to just plain old fraud and contract cases. And we have far fewer conflicts because we're a smaller firm and we don't load up cases with five lawyers. We usually have two lawyers working on a matter, and that's really the way to do it.
Yeah.
So we're having fun.
And that's important. You, whatever you hire a vendor, make sure he enjoys doing what he or she does as a game changer. Give that website one more time.
mbssmartlaw.com. Two S's in the middle.
Make sure you check that out. Lee, we're going to talk about the tariffs, and any listener of the show knows that I put huge importance on these. It's shocking to me to be in the 21st century, and we're still playing around with one of the most really dangerous devices economically. And this is something we've known since the Great Depression. It's like, oh, I see. When you punish customers, they will retaliate and punish you, leading not only to wide world depression, but a lot of economists have argued is what led the path straight to World War II. The Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act is what explicitly prohibited the United States sending oil to Japan, and that's what they were coming for on December 7th, 1941, which just happened this past week. I'm not saying that we were wrong for that position. I'm saying we didn't think consequentially then, and it doesn't appear that this administration is thinking consequentially now.
Well, I think this administration makes a lot of policies on resentment. The idea that somehow people are taking advantage of us. They're not. The truth is that the United States, with a more free trade position, has historically been a magnet for trade with other countries. And now we're finding out, to no one's surprise, except perhaps the president, that Some things cost more when you put tariffs on them. There are many things that we don't make very well or very efficiently, and we're better off concentrating on what we're best at, which is high technology and services, and let other people be in what I would call smokestack industries or small businesses that are labor intensive. The United States is a high-tech economy and should be. So things cost more. And the Trump administration apparently is grudgingly recognized this because they've lowered tariffs on things like coffee and bananas. You know, we don't grow a lot of bananas in the United States. We don't have a lot of coffee plantations in the United States. And so they are tacitly conceding that higher tariffs are stupid. And the idea that this resentment approach is going to do the United States any good strikes me as very, very foolish. Now, it makes sense to go after the Europeans for having trade barriers to us and to try to do them in a reciprocal way. But we're not helping the developing countries at all, and we're creating resentment, and we're giving China many avenues for advance. That's unfortunate and foolish. So the real question is, what's going to happen in the U.S. Supreme Court? And I think they're going to show enough independence that they will finally strike down something that Trump is in favor of. Yeah. I think they feel they've got to show they have a spine, and I believe that the tariffs will be overturned.
Yeah, I believe too. I mean, there's a lot there to unbox, and like some of this stuff, like you were talking about, law of comparative advantage. You described it, and this is something that was developed by David Ricardo back in the 18th and 19th century. This is old. We're not learning anything new here. It's common sense to go, oh, this country's better at making this than us. We can do it far more affordably to have them do it. Essentially do it for us at a lower cost to the welfare of the American people. That's common sense. It also creates good relationships between us and those countries, right? Kumbaya is way better than this ratification like we haven't seen since just before World War II, to be perfectly honest with you. Now, I think it's very tariff-driven. Frederick Bastiat, also in 18th century, with if goods are not crossing borders, troops are. I mean, there's some just really sage but old thoughts here that we're treating like they're somehow unique or we're experimenting like we've never been there before. And frankly, I find it frightful and incredibly myopic.
I agree. And watching various Republican talking points where people, spokespeople, twist themselves into a pretzel to try to justify the tariffs is nonsense. I've heard that they've brought in, you know, a lot of money. Well, they haven't brought in anything close to affecting our national debt. And it's stupid. And, I'm surprised that Trump is still carrying out that belief. But basically, he's made his whole career on resentments and rejecting things that would seem to be common sense. So,
yeah.
That may hurt him because, on the one hand, food, lots of kinds of food, grocery bills, and consumer goods are more expensive because of tariffs. On the other hand, while we continue to export oil, the price of oil is going down, and that's not making, Texans very happy. It's probably good for the average consumer, but their gasoline prices haven't gone down enough to make them happy. So he may be caught in a double bind, which is even though gasoline is cheaper, people are still hurting, and grocery bills are the talk of the day.
No question about it. This brand new word that never existed before 2025 called affordability, if you listen to Donald Trump, It's the driver. It's actually the driver that I think got him elected, to be perfectly honest with you, yet he's abandoned it as president. And now we're like doing the most boneheaded things, particularly if you're a Republican. They used to mock whenever the Democrats would propose policies that would require subsidizing something because of shortages or attacks on demand that policy was making. But now we're doing the exact same thing. We've waged a war on the U.S. Agriculture. It could not be any more systematic if we tried what we're doing with American agriculture. And what are we going to do? We're going to give what Republicans used to call welfare checks to farmers because they can't make a living. That is the epitome of policy that's gone awry. That's insanity is what that is, Lee.
That's true. Well, the most abject, the most telling evidence of the abject surrender to reality by some people is the fact that Trump now proposes to give the farmers $12 billion to offset some of their losses from tariffs. I don't know whether that'll work or not, because by some estimates, the losses from tariffs to the farm industry is like $30 billion, and he's proposing to give them $12 billion. That's really not going to help us. If you want to use tariffs as an instrument of policy, you got to think pretty selectively about how you do that. And Trump seems to be making the wrong decision everywhere.
Yeah. And meanwhile, he gave, what, $40 billion to Argentina? which they're using for soy to compete against American farmers. And he's doing that because, you know, frankly, he's just a huge fan of the Argentina's free market, allegedly free market, although he's here with his hat out getting aid from the United States. They don't want to practice what he calls socialism, but he has no problem taking money from the U.S. And I think, you know, really, you get down to it, I think Trump dislikes the Argentina's president's style. Get right down to it.
Right. We're practicing crony capitalism, which is the billionaires have the president's ear. And if they want some kind of special treatment, they get it. And that includes relief from certain tariffs, like letting NVIDIA sell chips to China. But on the other hand, we're not making rational economic decisions.
Yeah, we are not. Okay, so I got on a tangent. I'm not saying it didn't have value, but I want to go back to your very original point. I agree with you that this court is likely to reverse it, and I don't think they're going to do it in a small way. And by the way, just for those not familiar, this decree, that's what it was, right, has faced courts at a breakneck speed. Not fast enough for me, but it's moved quickly, with at least one court saying, yeah, we don't even need to see it. Just go ahead and skip it to the next court. And it's gone through the most important test, which is the trade court, a court made up of people who only deal with trade issues, and it was unanimous. No, you cannot do this. It's real simple. A tariff is another word for a tax. It's a fancy word for a convoluted form of taxation, but it's a tax. Article 1, Section 8 says that all revenue-raising bills, which a tariff is, must not only begin in Congress, but specifically in the U.S. House of Representatives. This is a no-brainer. To me, I look at it, and there's two members of the Supreme Court who seem to be little more than just pure fans of Trump, and they'll support him, Thomas and Alito. The rest, I would be surprised if he gets more than one more vote. I'm kind of predicting a 6-3 on this.
I think you're right. I really think that's what's going to happen. And it also adds or has the overlay that this is a chance for the Supreme Court to show that it is not a bootlicker for the Trump administration.
Yeah. And they really need to do that. I don't think they are fully aware that they have put themselves, by the way they have done things, into almost an existential crisis position from a pure perception-wise. Why do we have a court anyway? You know, to me, a lot of what I'm seeing kind of reminds me of what Netanyahu's been doing in Israel, where he's waged a war on the judicial branch. He wants one branch of government, and it'd be him. Even though he's not president, he's prime minister, he does not want any friction. And frankly, friction equals freedom.
That's right.
Final thoughts from you.
Well, I'm glad that we're in agreement on almost everything today. We'll find out if the center is going to hold.
Yeah, yeah. I'm anxious to have this conversation, the unboxing of this decision either way. I mean, I might be in the hospital if they somehow figures out how not to do it, how to get it his way. But I want to unbox it with you after that's done. It'll be interesting. That's one thing I got to admit, Lee, you and I have no limit to interesting conversation topics, even unheard of historically ones.
Well, as they say, we live in interesting times. Some of them are things that cause me despair, and we'll just have to see what the 2026 off-year election brings to us.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll have a lot to say there. Lee Kaplan, thanks so much for being with us. I am Kevin Price. You're listening to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. Stay tuned for more after this. Welcome back to the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. I'm your host, Kevin Price, talking to you about you and your business, and delighted to have on the program a show favorite, a personal favorite, Wendy Bork. She is phenomenal at what she does. She's truly a thought leader when it comes to dealing with challenges. A lot of people talk about challenges. We all have challenges, some more so than others. And I'm going to let her take a minute to talk about her health story that falls into real challenges. It's not that we got out of bed too late. We're talking about real things here, and she's phenomenal at it. And really, as a thought leader on how to navigate life, regardless of what you're facing. Phenomenal what she does, international best-selling author, regular contributor on the Price of Business Digital Network. I think she's on every one of our partner websites, which is a dozen different sites. And so we love having you with us.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for the great intro. I really enjoy helping women navigate chronic challenges, and it stems from my diagnosis back when I was in my late teens of multiple sclerosis. And now I spend my years and days guiding women who just pretend they're fine and keep going along, which is not good for our health. Just because we look good on the outside doesn't mean that we're not carrying invisible inside. And it's time to, I think, switch that around. It's time to, you can live with the symptoms, but also feel like you are taking command of your health. Because that's the other piece that a lot of people miss, including myself. Like, take ownership and take the steps to feel better yourself.
Yeah, it comes back to one of my favorite sayings that I'm fairly wishy-washy at applying, but I can see it and go, Kevin, you could do better. Which, by the way, is not helpful for me to say that. But it's being owners of our lives rather than victims. Mm-hmm. And when we perpetually pretend we don't have issues and things continue to deteriorate because we do have issues, next thing you know, we're whining and moaning like a victim when the entire time we could have been owners. And I think that is centerpiece. That's the thing that I think attracted me originally to you and your work, and why I saw it as so vital, not only for our business audience, but our huge lifestyle audience as well. And so people need to go to heartsofwellness.com to learn more about what Wendy does, because I think it's so crucial.
And the other piece is, like you said, like, why is this happening to me? That needs to be flipped around. Like, what is the lesson inside this? There's always a lesson somewhere. Maybe it's that we need to slow down and pause and just take a breath or take a different view on a different outlook on what's happening.
Yep, absolutely. All right, and that is a great segue, which was totally unplanned, for our topic today. That leads into a time of the year that the song says is the most wonderful time of the year, but it was often the most stressful. And one of the reasons why it's so stressful is anticipation about next year. You know, what can I do better? Which is a great question to ask. But you got to get very strategic and tactical on how you answer that, or it's going to be another year of disappointment. That's really the gist of what we're going to focus on today with your work.
Yes, And people wait for January. Oh, well, it's December now, so I might as well wait till January. No, you can start now. Just start today. Make one simple change that you've been wanting to do. Just take a piece of it and change something. Instead of waiting for this whole big project in January, and then unfortunately, Quitter's Day comes around January 9th or 10th, and then it's not worth it anymore, and we're overwhelmed, and then we just throw it away. So yeah, it's more important to start right now.
Absolutely. You know, when I was in college, I began to think this way about I need to take advantage of the new year. Oh, look at this new Year's resolution concept. What's that? Let me dig deeper. You know, and in college, I had like a list of 30 different items, almost all of which were gone, not because they were solved, but because I abandoned them before January was done. And that was kind of a recurring thing. And that to me is, you know, I've learned over time where I take a different approach. And like you advise, not only do I get started in December, I'm not waiting. If I see something I need to work on, I begin working on it now. I'm pretty methodical at it. I need to see quantifiable and qualifiable progress, or why bother? But, you know, what I learned, though, one of the things I learned is that you can bite off too much than you, or more rather than you can chew. And so you make that list, and even if it's only 10's a lot, you're going to abandon a bunch of those. Choose a few that you can really get movement on, because the movement will make you add more way before January 2027.
Mm-hmm. Right. And even if you do make the list, go through right away and decide which ones need to be secondary. You know, have your primary list, have your secondary list. Because sometimes our brain just needs to unload all of it, which is good for us, but then have those, you know, make a category or put a number on it or just put a date on it, even if that helps you. You know, we're all different, I realize, and having the list, having something to reflect back to does help. And like you said, just do one thing. Just do one small step.
Yeah, I think you nailed really the difference between a goal and a wish. You know, and wish is kind of up there, you know, with Tooth Fairy activity, maybe Santa Claus, and if there's any children listening, talk to your parents about this. I don't want to upset you. I doubt there are. But, you know, if it's not quantifiable, like I want to accomplish the following, and if it doesn't have a time frame at all involved, like by X date, I want this to happen, and I'll revise my plans accordingly if I haven't reached it or if I overreached it. You know, it's a dynamic thing. It's not a static thing. It's a quantifiable and qualifiable thing, or it's just a wish like little kids do.
And the top part of the problem is we are judging ourselves constantly. We judge ourselves like, oh, I should have had this done by now, when in fact, this is a huge task that you're taking on no matter what it is, if it's your health, if it's your career, even with family. Just, you know, take the overarching view of what is possible and what you can do with by yourself. And then if you need someone to collaborate with that will help you stay accountable, you know, take on that task of finding somebody that will keep you on subject.
Yeah, yeah, accountability partners are huge. Or what you do as a coach. I'm sure you help your clients, if, you know, depending on the relationship and your objectives working with you when it comes to their goals.
Exactly. And that's, I guess, the benefit, you know, for my world of me already navigating something like MS, that I get it. I understand what they're going through. Maybe I don't have the exact symptoms in this exact moment, but I've probably had it over these 30 years of what they are dealing with and how to view it, how to approach it, even how to ask your doctors more questions, how to, you know, take a step aside from what your doctor is telling you and do something in conjunction with what the medical world is telling you. Just because
yeah, all of that is owner talk, and that's imperative.
Yeah.
You know, the more ownership we have, you know, I have a friend of mine who had, he's had over 1 million books sold over the years. Steve Chandler, you know, he says, whatever you cannot own, you're a victim of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I say own as much as you humanly possibly can of what's going on in your life. That doesn't mean doormat yourself. That doesn't mean taking unnecessary ownership of things that you did not do. But whatever you can own, you can address. What you don't own,
You're a victim of.
Right. And that's all, these are all pieces that contribute towards our transformation of, you know, not judging ourselves and giving ourselves the grace to take an extra week to do a project or take an extra week to create another habit. You know, these are all pieces. We are multifaceted. We are not robots. We are human beings, and we need to allow ourselves to feel that. You know, this,
yeah,
that's piece of it too.
No question about it. So my time with you always flies, and I always have more content or topic than I do time with you. I know you share my frustration, so we're getting near the end. I want specific marching orders, maybe get systematic on step-by-step for the listener on what they do to prepare for 2026, being mindful of the fact they should start in 2025, the days we have left.
Oh, exactly. I agree. And starting today, take 5 minutes and make a list of all the things that you feel you want to accomplish, whether that's next year, in 5 years, in 10 years. Just make this huge bucket list and then go through it and kind of quantify where that is in your timeline. And if it's something you want to accomplish next year, take a couple steps right now this week to make progress towards it, whether that's, you know, giving up coffee or, you know, starting to eat healthier. Just swap out one thing. That is progress. Even though you tell yourself it's not enough, it is progress. So allow yourself the grace to just start small and expand outward.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and I'm a big fan. I don't know. Everyone's different. And you've mentioned that several times, and I think that's really, you know, a good thing to be reminded of. But I'm a big fan of maybe knocking off the easiest items rather than the mm-hmm. most challenging ones first to build momentum.
Right.
As a part of a
yeah.
strategy. I don't know mm-hmm. your thoughts on that.
I agree, too, because then your brain is automatically thinking, well, this is easier than I thought, or I can do this now. I don't have to wait. And if something feels easy, then we're more likely to work on it and work through it.
Yeah, yeah, I love that. I love that. Final thoughts from you as we wrap it up. And, again, your best website for more information.
Yep. My best website is hearts is plural, of wellness.com. And I feel like, as we said in the beginning, December is this gateway of, yes, we can start something now that is going to set the foundation for 2026 and then beyond. And just allow yourself to let the wisdom come through that's inside of each one of us, because it's all yeah. inside us, and it just wants to flow out. So let yourself be your own guide as well.
I love that. Yeah. And trust yourself more. Well, probably a lot of the stuff your gut's telling you, you need to listen to. You know, from a mental health perspective, I heard a thing that psychologists actually said is that one of the big difference between emotionally and psychologically healthy people and those who are not is that those who are healthy give themselves the benefit of the doubt. And I like mm-hmm. that. That's very gentle and yet proactive, because many people don't take action because they don't give themselves the benefit of the doubt.
Right. They're too busy asking everybody around them what they should do when that person has no clue how their brain is thinking or anything. It's more important to trust yourself than to ask 50 people their opinions, I believe.
Absolutely. All righty. Got to end with that. Always goes faster than I prefer, but I always love my time with you. Thank you so much, Wendy Bork.
Thank you, Kevin.
And happy holidays and happy new year. I look forward to hearing more success ideas as we enter the new year, and appreciate this time. I am Kevin Price. This is the nationally syndicated Price of Business Show. By the way, you know, I'm talking about next year is the 25th anniversary of the Price of Business Show, one of the longest continuously running shows of its type in the country. Excited about that. We will make a big deal out of it next year. And so glad to have people like Wendy as part of our team to help people navigate each and every year. Stay tuned for more after this on this station.
That wraps up another Price of Business. I am glad to be with you. Really enjoyed it and enjoying our new home here on these stations around the country. I do want to remind you that the show continues 24/7. Not only do we have this weekly show that you can hear on this station, but we're on other stations around the country with a daily program as well. You can easily learn about them by visiting us at priceofbusiness.com. We affectionately say it is the show that never ends. And what we mean by that is that it continues 24/7 with the addition of new audio, video, articles, and more at priceofbusiness.com. While there, we'd like you to engage with us on social media. Follow us on Facebook and, like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Kevin Price Live and all of our sister sites as well. All right, I'm going to take a break until next time. Next week we'll be back with you with much more information for you, and look forward to that conversation. And I want to say again thank you to USA Business Radio to make it possible for this to have been commercial-free, an entire hour of commercial-free. And guess what? Even more commercial free than public radio. So we're excited about that. Enjoy the rest of your day right here on this station.